Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Hey, welcome to another This Life podcast.
This
Bob.
Life, my
hey,
friends.
Man. What's happening, buddy?
Here we are. I have some This Life issues. So after we do our intro, let's jump right in.
All right, two quick things. Our friends at Apex M, don't forget them. They In Control Medical is their website, and they produce a product at Apex M that really is an effective way of avoiding medication and surgeries for women with stress urinary incontinence. Pretty much every woman that has a pregnancy has the glory of dealing with that at some point in their life. And I know when I was in training, we did lots of surgeries.
Sneezing
on that
can cause urination. Right. Sneezing, do you know that, Dr.
Sneezing,
Drew?
Laughing, all that stuff. Playing tennis. And this is a device that really retrains your muscles. And I'm so happy. I had to do some of that same stuff after my prostate surgery. So
did
I know
you?
How important this stuff can be. Great. Hold on, Emily. I hear you. Emily's about to jump in with Kegel Camp. I know she's ready to go with that.
Interesting. Usually I am, but I have something else to say.
That is Emily from Sex with Emily. You want to talk about it real quick?
Well, I was just going to say that in France,
yes,
postnatal care for women, a huge thing that has a big part of it is using this kind of device for women to work on their
retrain
PC
their
muscles,
bladders,
to retain
yeah.
their bladders, and
yeah.
here
and
they're
the
like
orgasmic function, everything.
Everything.
No, now here, they go, we'll sew you back up, you'll be fine.
Yeah, they're like, we'll sew you back up. Oh, we didn't tell you about the leaky diapers and everything. Like, we didn't tell you about that. So you actually have to do this if you want to repair and you want to have urinary incontinence. But also for women without children, I just want to say you can still sneeze and pee.
Well, as you get older, that's what I've always said. We'll talk about this in the podcast.
Right, so, okay, right.
But as you get older, a lot of that stuff comes with women being a female. You don't want to be a female. Well, anyway. And also our friends at Rocky Mountain Treatment Center. Again, they are in Great Falls, Montana. Beautiful environment. Their therapies. First of all, they have top-notch professionals. I've vetted all these people there.
They've been around for 32 years.
That's right. Absence-based treatment.
And if you had to give a tip to people about rehab, if it's been around for 10, 20 years, that's a good sign.
20 is a good sign.
But no,
and
these
also,
rehabs around nowadays, Drew, been open for 9 months.
Oh, forget it. But the other thing is, does the sober community support it? Are there meetings there? Things like that. Do they come? People meet there and support there,
yeah,
and offer spot, and or are they at least embraced by the sober community? You don't have to have the meetings at your facility. You can go to obviously 12-step meetings in your community, but are they embraced? Is that treatment center thought of well?
Is it integrated with the community? Yeah.
All right. So our guest today, Cindy Kaza, is still with us.
Thank you for having me.
At Medium Cindy Kaza, and as I said, Sex with Emily at sexwithemily.com is the website.
Yep.
The
and Twitter handle, Instagram, and Snapchat.
All Sex with Emily.
We should Snapchat now. It's all at Sex with Emily.
We should Snapchat now.
It's my new thing.
And so,
what about what's the thing Andy Dick does? Telescope. Do you telescope?
Periscope.
Yeah, I've dabbled. I've dabbled in Periscope.
Telescope.
Well, yeah, similar. Yeah. Periscope, whatever. It's hard to keep track these days.
So,
Dr. Drew, pregnancy and sex.
Yeah,
let's
talk about
it, because it's going on at my house, and I need to know some info. There's no.
So there's a pregnant person.
My girlfriend is pregnant.
Oh, with your child?
Yes.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah,
wow,
yeah.
You never
it's
know.
Great.
Okay.
You never know.
Congratulations.
You never know in Los Angeles.
Wow, congratulations.
And she seems to have an increased libido.
Right.
What stage of the pregnancy is she?
Second trimester.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Usually
really?
It doesn't kick into the third trimester usually.
Oh my God, I could never do that. Isn't there a little person in there?
No, you
Bob, what's the matter with you?
Come on, really?
I was raised in Orange in a behind a we Republican
had,
curtain.
We had three people in there in a high-risk pregnancy. It did not stop me.
No, but it makes sense that her libido can be boosted because estrogen, progesterone levels rise, so it makes sense.
Yeah, okay. Some women shut down from progesterone and some women go up with
it.
Okay. And then there's also all the pressure on that whole pelvic architecture that can kind of, as things get swollen again.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So it's both hormonal.
What I want to know is, because I am a prude, as much of a rock and roll guy as I present, I just don't want to do anything wrong with the little guy in there.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right.
The only thing you have to worry about is STDs. Don't expose that. And
which there is UTIs, up.
Okay, but
around.
She should pay. She has to pay attention to that anyway.
What if you don't like cranberry juice, Drew? What do you do?
You have to take antibiotics.
Yeah, do
for
not
UTIs.
Take cranberry juice.
No.
That's when you end up in the hospital
no,
with a kidney infection.
For urinary health, ongoing.
Listen,
ongoing.
Emily,
once,
Emily
once
thought
it's
that,
gone.
Emily ended up in 3 months, 2 weeks in the hospital.
Exactly.
Not trying to drink cranberry juice out of the infection, but once the infection's gone, you're always told cranberry juice, drink
it'll
cranberry
acidify
juice.
Your urine is a helpful thing, but it's not going
to
be
what other things do that to your urine?
Well, certain medical conditions and aging and stuff like that. But mostly it's trauma of during intercourse of pushing bacteria up into the bladder.
No, I don't mean causing it. What other things to prevent it as in between, you know?
You
nothing?
Can't. No, not really. I mean, there's
drink lots of fluids.
Yeah, lots
go
of
to
fluids.
The bathroom after sex.
Right,
you know,
don't hold your urine in. And again, watch the trauma to that
area. Pregnant women don't hold their urine in, Drew. How long's it been since you've been around that?
But are you asking about like also certain positions you
yes,
think that are best?
Yes,
okay,
yes.
So typically the woman, I mean, she can tell you if she's experiencing any pain at all, she should stop.
No pain, but a woman
on top is great because then
she can
control.
Are women aware when they're getting trauma to that urethral area?
I hope that they're paying attention to it.
Can you can feel that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you could. Oh, yeah. I mean, when you're having trauma, even when
it
you're not pregnant,
Drew,
you
can
feel
it.
No, but it can also not be painful. And I'm wondering if they're just aware of how to limit trauma to that region.
Yeah, I mean, well, so how you limit it is you do the positions where you have where she would have control. So woman on top, she can control the range of motion, the depth, you know, how fast she's going, stuff like that. So she's definitely in control. And spooning is a great position as well.
Yes.
The spooning position because it's like just much more gentle.
But I'm a little worried that he's going to be rejecting his girlfriend right when she
is. Okay, yeah, so you go back to that.
There
you're
you
like,
go.
No, I'm well, a lot of
why
men,
we're here to talk.
A lot of men have that fear that, well, if I'm my penis, I'm going to be hitting the kid's head and he's going to brain damage. That's what you're thinking, I know.
You guys are all laughing and thinking that's
no,
stupid.
No, because I know exactly.
Guys call love line with that all the time and we laugh at them.
Yeah, exactly.
We're laughing at you, Bob.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying that, no, you're just like a lot of guys who think,
it
why
just
would
doesn't
you?
Seem like there's a little thing growing in there. Yes. We got to get him going.
I mean, no, there was no, unless she's in pain, there are no studies that say that it's going to harm the child.
Okay.
And in fact, a lot of times for late childbirth, they say if
to
she's
make
late,
it happen.
They say make it happen, have some sex.
Also, flooding her system with all those good oxytocin hormones.
She's masturbating.
Okay,
right?
It's all good for her.
Yeah,
okay, great.
Orgasms, all good.
So I'll participate then.
Yeah,
okay, you've convinced me.
Okay, good.
Okay, great.
You're rejecting her. I feel so bad for your girlfriend.
I'm not rejecting. I'm just very cautious.
He's pre-rejecting, but we're stopping it right now, so it won't happen.
Emily's got so many ideas of other things you could do, by the way.
Weren't you taught that girls are fragile,
Drew? Let me tell you this.
No.
Sex is not just about intercourse. It's about intimacy.
Yeah.
So there's other things that you can do that don't include your penis.
No, I understand that.
She, in fact, brought a whole box of stuff here.
I did. I brought toys.
Now, you said, is there anything that can go wrong? Also, if, you know, talk to your obstetrician about it, make sure there's no special risks in your particular pregnancy, preterm labor, that kind of
stuff.
We're
there all the time. We were there, Dave, on Friday. Guess what? So 18 weeks.
Yeah.
At the 16-week point, couldn't see whether there's a penis or a vagina. 18 weeks.
That's when you tell.
18 weeks.
Yeah.
Right? So it's either a large clitoris or a very small penis.
We still can't tell. Well, babies are supposed to have very
small
penis.
Clitoris, but no.
Sheesh.
So now we're going to know in 2 more weeks, but the woman for 45 minutes, the nurse was moving it around going, I can't, what do you think? It's up to you guys. What do you think that is? And I was like, that's an either or right there.
Go back in a week or two.
Let me go to a quick email here. It's from Natalie. She's talking about whether or not somebody can get addiction to a person.
Yes,
and where they could look like a drug addiction. This kid's
also
smoking pot and stuff, but we don't know how much, but he's angry, withdrawn, depressed. And the family has this feeling as though he's in a cult. And I've always told people that, you know, abusive relationships, which whenever you're severely addicted to somebody, it's quasi-coercive, can look like a cult of two, you know?
Yeah.
You're nodding vigorously. What's going on, Cindy?
Well, I disagree. You can be addicted to a person or a relationship. And I find two people that have addiction problems tend to become addicted to love or addicted to relationships as well.
And again, trauma is a common sort of issue that sets people up for sex and love addiction.
Yeah, absolutely.
You guys watch the Judd Apatow series Love? You would love this.
Yes,
do you like
one
it?
Of it? Yeah, I love it.
But it goes as it goes on. The Gillian Jacobs, is that her name, character really unravels, and it's about the guy who is the main character, the actor, and his actual wife wrote it. It's about her.
Yeah, we're talking about with Andy's on it, right?
Yes, we're talking with Andy about it. And it really chronicles sex and love addiction very nicely.
Did you see the ultimate thing on the news the other day? What happened in San Bernardino or whatever? The guy with his girlfriend with the gun. Did you see that?
Uh-oh,
yeah,
no. What happened?
I think I did, yeah.
And he shot her and then shot himself right live on television.
Oh, no.
And you know what it was all about? She didn't like him anymore. And so I thought of you when I... No, that's what you're saying. Your kids are calling into Loveline saying it's time.
Oh, yeah, that whole thing. It's thankfully.
It was played out on television.
But I want to tell you, I'm glad you brought it up like that, Bob. the way I describe it, it sounds like it's a sinister kind of a stalking. I don't want to give that impression. These are kids who are just sort of goofy and lost.
They call it love.
I call it stalking.
They call it love.
It is love addiction and stuff, and I call it stalking, but it's not stalking that the way people think about stalking. I have a pretty, just the way we have a broad swath for what alcoholism is, I have a broad swath for what stalking is, too. I mean,
okay,
but these are stalking
behaviors.
You
didn't see this thing?
No.
Okay. I have a question, too. I mean, to Dr. Drew, you know, when you fall in love, it releases chemicals into your body.
Yep.
Right. And that's what I think we become addicted to.
True,
is that feeling.
There's some of that, and women are particularly prone to that. And they will even, I've got a website that I refer to called centerforhealthysex.com. The clinical director there was telling me, she wrote some stuff, which I thought, she's got an upcoming book, and she had me read it, and I'm very impressed by it. And she was talking about how women particularly will use the oxytocin and the dopamine surge that you get with connection, and they'll amp it up through sex.
Yeah.
And so men don't know that's happening. They don't know what that is. They don't understand you. So men get a certain reward from sex. It's much more similar to cocaine or drugs.
Right.
Women get this other thing, this connection,
the attachment.
That's
why I always tell women.
That's not a real attachment, but it's sort of a high.
Chemical.
It's a high on it.
You convince yourself that, you know, and you tend to overlook the red flags waving in the distance.
Oh, yeah.
When you sex with someone too soon, you're thinking, I can't see any of that because I'm attached.
What's even more interesting is how women can serial do that and kind of know they just want the attachment and then use sex as that and know that they're going to feel bad the next day when it's not still there.
Right.
That breaks my heart. Women do that. It's just it's so
hard. That's what the girl's doing on the show, right?
Yes.
That you love.
Well, that's
very
why,
much.
So, with the love show,
Very
I think that's why so many women and men have a hard time with relationships and attachment and when you have sex too soon because you just, you do get attached. And you were saying before that, I was going to say something. It gets confusing.
Well, how women leave it behind, that part.
They'll
get that high with the attachment and then knowing that this isn't going to, they know
it. Bad situation.
They know they're using sex to do it.
This is the addiction. I was going to say, you reminded me, there was a study I saw last week about how the significant men and women, after they have one night stands or casual sex, they're more likely to feel much more depressed after. And even though they know that, they keep doing it again and again to get that high, to get that attachment, to get that affirmation.
Yep.
Much like a drug addict.
Yeah.
Right?
And,
no.
And it can get bad. It can get very, very bad.
Yeah.
You and I have talked about this in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any questions for Emily, Cindy?
Oh, geez. Yeah, actually.
Recently soon to be divorced.
Well, no, yeah. I
questions? Oh, yeah, so we can go there.
We're all different kinds here. Okay, so getting divorced.
You're supposed to say congratulations.
Oh, congratulations.
I don't know if I'm there yet, but yeah, you know, I am going through a divorce. It's almost final, and I'm feeling like sex is the last thing on my mind. I just, I'm like, this box is locked, and I don't know for how long it's locked.
Right. No, I hear you.
But I don't want to be that way because I know that maybe that's unhealthy as well, but I'm not sure. You know, I've never been divorced before. It's my first time.
Okay, that's totally healthy, first of all. If you were saying, I just want to go out and sleep with every guy in my midst, then I'd be concerned.
Yeah.
So the fact that you're like, I'm not really ready yet at all. I'm going through you're not even divorced yet, or you are divorced?
It's almost over. Yeah.
Okay, so it would make sense that right now is going to be some self-care, looking at the relationship, what you learned from it, what you want in your next partner, and just like, you know, rebuilding your life without sex. But eventually when you're ready, and I give you a toy, just kidding.
She makes it rain
toys.
But
here's the thing, like, you know, in a few months, who knows, 6 months, you know what? You'll have a day where you'll be like, I'm ready. I think I want to date again. But right now, just take care of yourself.
Yeah. Do you feel like a sexual anorectic? Has it ever been an issue before?
No, it's never been an issue before. Right. So no, I don't feel that way.
Just the idea of starting new and meeting new people, you're like, I don't, it makes sense.
Yeah, but I think, you know, what it is also a healthy fear of having that false feeling of love or that emotional connection when I'm not ready and not ready to get involved in that.
Also not ready to recover if it doesn't work out.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what it is. Yeah.
It's healthy. Just, you know, stay away from it.
I'm glad I'm healthy.
I think it is. I mean, you know. If it goes on for 3 years and you're like, I
would be
house.
Let me pose you a hypothetical and see if it's healthy to
all
you.
Right.
Because I think in Southern California, it is healthy. When you're doing it, it feels very unnatural. Recently was Easter. And so, you know what Elvis, my son, had? He had me and my pregnant girlfriend and his mom and her boyfriend that she's moving in with. All five of us, Easter breakfast together.
Love it.
Getting along and whatever. So you feel that kind of
healthy.
That's the way to do it.
I think if the kids are okay with it and they're okay with your partners. I think the hardest part of divorce, oftentimes we overlook, is not just the separation of the parents. That's a really hard thing to get through. But when you guys bring in a new partner.
Emily's been through this.
Yeah, like six
you
times.
You want to talk about it?
So,
seriously, tell them.
Well, each one of my parents were married. My parents got divorced when I was 8. And then they each one got remarried 2 times after that. I attended 4 of my parents' weddings before I was 25. And
but let me one up
to me
ya.
Too.
But let me one up you. I'm going to one up her.
But, okay.
My mother was the maid of honor at her divorced husband's wedding to his new
right.
wife.
See, okay,
how
that's
fucking
awesome.
Crazy!
Wait, this is
that?
Your mother,
but what
sister
I'm
mom.
Is,
this is his
sister mom.
Please add that piece. His sister mom was the maid of honor.
Okay, and how did you feel
at her husband's next wedding?
Sister mom.
How did that make you feel?
It just makes me feel like it's a miracle I can walk and chew gum at the
yes.
same time.
Right. Well. Right. Well, I'm saying.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
no,
I know
I
you come from the same kind of world
no,
I
no.
come from.
Oh, no, no. Emily was a much more even manic world.
Yeah. Even
not so
manic.
Antisocial, war-torn, all
yeah,
that stuff you guys
I mean,
through.
But what I'm saying is, all I'm saying is that, how did Elvis react to that?
He does a strange thing where he talks about Kevin, that's my ex's
right.
boyfriend, a lot, as if he's wanting to talk about it. So I talk about it with him.
Right.
I say, so you always, you know, you're talking about Kevin. Let's talk about Kevin. I love
probably
Kevin.
Right.
Kevin's great.
It confuses right. him, I think.
He's
I think
five?
That, yeah, yeah, he's five. So I think that no matter how much you talk to him about this, is, it still makes him feel like this isn't like other mommies and daddies.
I would think about it. Again, this is not my area of expertise, but my instinct is I would think about it much the way he talks about the Easter Bunny.
Yeah.
He's trying to make sense of it in his own ways.
Yes.
Remember,
right.
the
that's
Easter
what
Bunny.
I recognize. That's yeah. what he's doing. So yeah. I talk about it. And then I don't know if you feel this way, but so we're the first divorced family in our circle of friends and
really?
At his school
okay.
and everything like that. And I just say, yeah, we're the first one so far.
Right, exactly. Right. Like next week will be another one.
Yeah.
No, but I have to say that to me, if the parents can get along still, that's great. Because
yeah.
obviously the worst thing that happens when the parents badmouth each other to the children. Like mm-hmm. that's where, but if the divorce, you know, has been a I don't know, peaceful, but your kid
there's
was not traumatized.
There's a lot more peace and love.
Okay,
and
so
harmony.
You guys can get along and get together,
yeah.
and then just, you know, I think the mistake my parents made was they would just date someone, and then my dad would like bring him, like, I saw him on Sundays and Thursdays, like, here's someone else I was dating, and then you get married, and they didn't make choice in the best partner, so I didn't want to be around them.
But how problematic for you as a woman, too.
That was so...
Seeing
was,
him just use
well,
women.
Well, but she wasn't
yeah.
even a woman then.
Well,
how
was
old
getting,
was
well,
the first time?
The first time, I was like 13, and his second wife was like...
Oh, yeah, come on.
When I was 18, and then he died when I was 20. That's a whole nother host issues. But so I think, again, if he's comfortable with it and you guys all get along and you're not like forced, like the thing that my parents would do is like, I want you to treat this person like they're your dad or your mom. And they would like force
yeah.
these step parents on me and then they'd be gone. So I think if you handle it, like you're, sounds like you're doing it in the right way. That
trying
I don't
to.
Think that's messed up. Like,
I
feel like
there's
wait.
A perfect way to do it.
No,
but everybody's trying.
But you are all, you're having Cindy. A daughter. She's not like a fly by night. I mean, you're having a daughter with her.
Yeah,
a kid,
yeah.
not a daughter.
Hopefully
no,
a daughter.
Yeah, sorry,
hopefully a
child,
large clitoris daughter.
Right. Dude, so much better than a small penis
just
male.
It sounds so wrong. I don't know.
This is
it's taking a turn. No.
This is going to happen. This is modern day relationships. People get divorced, they get into other ones. So how do you handle it? The best way to handle it is to be, you know, healthy relationships, all of you, all around, and that you're talking, communicating.
Okay,
so.
We got to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
All conversations and information exchanged during participation in the This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob Forrest podcast or interaction with drdrew.com website is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction per se. Nothing on these podcasts or posted on this site supplements or supersedes the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the sites or podcasts.
Hey, welcome back to This Life Podcast. I want to remind people about our friends at Rocky Mountain Treatment Center. Again, up there in Great Falls, Montana, and they're very proud of their equine therapy. And I'm very proud of the history of this program, 32 years of abstinence-based treatment. They
yeah.
persevere in staying just abstinence-based. Their professionals that use equine therapy are with the Association of Therapeutic Horsemanship International, PATH certified instructor. But mostly I'm interested in the quality work that the professionals all do there and the integrated teams they have. So if you're serious about your recovery, you can head up there and you cannot leave, which is what the
that's
other
what I like.
About it.
I like that.
Cindy, when we were growing up, you had some other marriages?
Well, yeah. My parents divorced when I was 3, and my father got remarried to my stepmom. My mom was married and divorced 4 times, so I can
okay,
mean, I can
it.
Relate.
I'm nothing
I can relate.
I'm not even
but, you know, it is difficult.
By chance we're in the helping field here?
It's difficult, yeah.
The four of us, yeah.
And, you know, I know through my mom's marriages, for my brother and I, and my brother's still here, you know, we both were like, when we got married, married were like, we're never getting divorced. We're not going to be like her. And right. we both got divorced, you know.
No.
But,
yeah,
but
my brother just got divorced. So he thought, no way. Yeah,
to
he
see
made 20
that.
Years, but,
yeah. yeah. I mean, it does affect you, you know. And to I also understand the step parent thing. And it's not easy. Yeah.
No, it's not easy.
Yeah.
It's a hard role.
I have another email. This is from Ken. And I can get to the weeds on this one a little bit. This is specifically for me. So let me read it to you. Prostate questions. PSA has been 4.4. 4.7, 3 days apart. 1 month later, 4.6, free PSA of 17%. I have asked for a biopsy and wonder if there are any other tests to consider. Ooh, he was raised by a Taoist priest. Oh, wow. he's educated in Eastern medicine. Ken, I would just say, unfortunately, I don't know, he doesn't say how old he is. And again, everything I say here is really not me. Listen to your physician. That's the bottom line. I mean, let me just say in generalities, what you got to worry about is the rate of increase of your PSA. Mine went from 1 to 4 in a year. 4 is still normal. He's just outside of normal range here at this 4.7. And first order of business might be an ultrasound. If you have any suspicious areas, still you might want to, you know, be treated for prostatitis. What they typically would do is treat you for prostatitis with 2 weeks, and then repeat the PSA. Maybe even do it again, then repeat the PSA, and then maybe even wait another 3 or 4 months before they go to biopsy. You don't want to rush to biopsy. It's biopsies are for real. It's not a trivial thing. More questions, go to PCF.org. That is the Prostate Cancer Foundation. PCF.org. They have lots of resources there. But ultimately, see a urologist, do what he or she says for you to do. Biopsy is great. We'll give you really a lot of definitive information. And then we can talk about what to do after that.
That's the Dr. Drew I worked with for years in a hospital. So here's the thing. You know what we need to do a show about? While you were talking, I thought of this. this hepatitis C drug.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Which one?
The one that cures it.
That's $10,000 per pill.
Yeah, it's but people are getting cured of it. But I think a lot of people that don't not necessarily need it are anxious and thinking they're going to die if they don't get that medicine.
Yes.
Do you understand? Because when I noticed that you wanted to know his age.
Yeah.
His age plays a big part of that.
A lot of things. Yes, prostate cancer particularly, you treat differently at different ages and
I have 20 something kids that have hepatitis C. They're so worried they're going to die if they don't get this medicine.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's kind of crazy.
Kind of crazy, but a legitimate issue. I mean, if they have any continued activity of the virus, they have chronic C and there's inflammation, their risk of liver cancer is high.
I know, but they get
high.
That's what qualifies you to get the medicine. They're not getting authorized for the medicine.
Okay,
and they're just,
well, good.
And they're in their 20s.
Yeah, you don't want to take a medicine that you're not.
That you don't need.
This is one thing that people don't get. There's a threshold after which the risk of treatment is worth the risk. Like I was telling you about the prostate biopsy. That's a risky thing. You only do it when it's warranted.
That's what I noticed.
It's routine, but it's risky. Same thing is true of putting a Tylenol in your mouth. Everything has to be assessed as a risk-benefit analysis. And if
people don't get that.
And there's a cost-benefit analysis in real sense.
Well, that's what the Hep C drug it is.
But there are some other stuff, ways of treating it without that super expensive medicine, too. But
stop smoking is what I say.
Stop drinking.
Well, no, these are 12-step people, right. and they're smoking, and they got denied for their whatever the name of the drug is. And I was like, you know, you're 20-something.
Right.
What's up, Cindy?
Worry about it.
Oh, nothing. I was just the stop smoking thing.
Cindy's in the middle of it.
Are you?
I was divorce smoking. That's what I was calling it. And then I was like, you know what? This doesn't feel good. I think I need to quit this.
Remember what I told you about chronic gum use?
Me.
You're the gum.
I just have TMJ or whatever, but that'll be all right.
Yeah.
Nicotine gum.
Yeah, people that start smoking.
He's the one that told me just chew the gum because I kept trying to stop and start and stop and start because we worked in rehab. It's so hard not to smoke.
Right. How long have you been on the gum?
11 years.
But the deal is
since
the gum,
he told me to chew it to my heart's content. Then about a year later, I came back and I go, "How
like
do I get off the
though,
gum?" And he
no,
goes,
okay.
"You just stop the gum."
No, it's okay to continue the gum.
You start smoking
but
again.
But now, since he started, there's some data that's come in that shows that if you start using nicotine under the age of 15, the probability of you staying off cigarettes is nearly zero.
Really?
So they're because your brain changes early on from the nicotine exposure. And so
replacement therapies is going to be the way to go.
Correct. How old were you when you started?
I was late, 30.
I was 15, so
when you started smoking cigarettes?
Yeah, it was the stupidest thing ever. Did you know that?
I thought sure you were a 12-year-old or something.
No, I never
Did you
smoked.
Chew tobacco or something?
No, I never. I was just doing heroin and coke.
Well,
I never smoked because my parents both smoked. They smoked at the dinner table. They smoked all the time. My mom used to make me wash the windows behind her chair to get the soot off.
Ugh.
Right? So I hated cigarettes. Then I'm dope sick on tour. The drummer of my band goes... And I'm sitting there just shivering, trying to make it to Denver to play the first show. And he goes, if you had a cigarette, you might feel better. And I was like, give me a cigarette. At 30 years old, I started smoking. Oh, yeah. For like 7 minutes.
Yeah. It does work a little bit.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Makes sense to me. Maybe we should use nicotine patches and heroin withdrawal. It's an interesting idea.
That would be good.
I hadn't thought about that. But are you okay today?
I feel great.
Yeah.
How long has it been?
Day four, but I've got some patches on. I'm like, I can do this.
Cindy was sitting at the breakfast table, like jonesing. I could see her, like, put another patch on.
Are you worried about eating too much?
No.
Okay.
No.
Because that's what a lot of people worry about.
You know what? I'd rather gain 5 pounds and quit smoking and heal my lungs than die of cigarettes.
One of my promotions of nicotine gum, one of the side effects is appetite suppressant. Mm-hmm. Did you know that?
Oh, it's one of the absolute effective appetite suppressants out there. In fact,
nicotine gum?
Yeah.
Wow.
I
think you could get narcissistic AA people to chew the gum rather than smoke.
But listen,
if you told them they might lose weight.
Hold on.
I didn't say nobody say it's the way to. I didn't say it's the way to lose weight or a healthy thing to do. I said it's an effective appetite suppressant. And Mike Catherwood and I have had long talks about. Geez, if there was a way to do nicotine for a weight loss product, that would work. Nicotine, caffeine, green tea extracts. There are things that work. But they're addictive and they're not necessarily healthy, and it's dicey. It's very
expensive. The nicotine gum, I can tell you, is more expensive than cigarettes. Guess why? Because Philip Morris owns the patent on nicotine gum.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, how crazy is that?
I mean, I believe it. I believe
it. I love it. I tip the hat to
them. Well, let's get back to sex. Emily, what do you want to talk to us about today?
What let's see.
Do you imagine sex and recovery, sex addiction?
What about orgasms? Let's talk about female orgasms.
So
okay,
hard.
Wait,
I
Bob.
10 years sex.
Hang on, Bob.
Female orgasm.
Yeah. Female orgasm. Mm-hmm. That's a great topic.
A lot of people aren't having them.
Oh, yeah. A lot of women aren't at
all. But a rather shocking number.
You mean during intercourse or just in general?
During intercourse, I would say is where the prime focus is.
Wait a minute. That's normal, right?
That's 30%. Only 30% of women can have has orgasms during intercourse typically. And of those 30%, not every time.
So wow. I mean, I'm the kind of person that's like, hey, you didn't, you know, come on. You got to figure this out here. I mean,
right.
Do you do it quickly?
No, but I mean, if I'm having sex and it's not happening, I tell the guy how to do it. I mean, I'm definitely like not embarrassed to do that.
With intercourse.
Can't have it with intercourse.
Well, that's what she's saying.
Saying like most women can't because
that's
because
normal,
sex,
Bob.
That's normal.
Can't or can't?
Can't. Cannot.
Cannot. 30% can sometimes.
Five or 10% will have multiple orgasms. It starts at penetration.
Those
women lucky? Are you considering that those women are lucky?
Oh, yeah.
Except those women all find oral sex very uncomfortable.
That's fine. That's a good trade-off, though. No, even though I love oral sex. If I could have multiples every time a penis went right into my vagina,
that would be amazing.
So
it's a different anatomy. It's a different biology.
But the thing is, because most women are not getting enough clitoral stimulation during intercourse. They're just not. Like, most positions don't provide it. They're not warmed up enough. There's not enough foreplay. And so they have to say,
think that the insertion is a little inhibiting to some women, too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
And not inhibiting to orgasmic function.
Inhibiting to orgasmic function.
Yeah.
It is. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah,
some
women
are like, no, I want nothing in there because I have to rub my clitoris. I have to get the first one out.
Get the muscles
and then,
tightened up, whatever.
Yeah, and then get warmed up. And then maybe I could have a G-spot. Like, it's all just out of whack because we're just told penetration, penis and vagina, it's going to feel amazing to the guys. And I think all this information, you have to remember, is still fairly new. If you think of like when Kinsey was the first person to really start talking about sex and blowjob, like in the late 50s. So now it's like people are still very...
Do you know who the head of the Kinsey Institute is now?
Who is it?
Ruth Carter. I think her name is Ruth. Ruth, help me up, Susan. I did a podcast with her on Dr.com. Just look up Ruth. And she's an older woman. She is Stephen Porges' wife. You hear about Stephen Porges all the time and the polyvagal theory. And she is the woman that did the research on the prairie voles.
Oh, right.
And
okay.
Oxytocin. And she did all that research.
I remember all that stuff. Yeah,
when I told people, I was like, fuck, if they mention prairie voles one more time, I'm going to punch them. But the woman that actually did the research, as usual, it's a little more complicated story than everyone tells it. But prairie voles do bond. They tend to have monogamous partners
but
tend
they're like
to.
Only, they're like the only.
And it's
animals
not exclusively
do, right.
so.
It's yeah. like sometimes this is one animal.
They get divorced. Do they get divorced?
They cheat.
They cheat, but mostly they're monogamous.
But they very much feel socially bonded, or you know, in
do wolves. What are the species that don't? Wolves bond for life.
Swans.
Penguins. Bonobos. I think so. Don't penguins bond for life?
Bonobos cheat.
Bonobos are the ones who cheat. Bonobos are the ones that always point out, I'm sorry, who cheat. But like penguins kind of same the thing though. Penguins they say, but like they're like, yeah, mostly.
But what about wolves?
I don't think wolves do.
I don't know. Hey, Emily, what about, we were talking about female orgasmic function. You now have you've come upon a product that is the solution to many of women's ills.
Okay.
So Sandy, listen carefully.
There's a toy. I'm listening.
Okay. There's a toy called the Womanizer. Which is a terrible name. And so I get, so part of my job is that like, the, you know, I get a lot of sex toys sent to me, like 25 pounds,
look at
like
these,
a
look,
week.
25 pounds, you brought in 30 pounds.
I did. She was like, what's wrong? I'm like toppling up the driveway carrying bags. So the thing about this toy, they're like, we've got this new toy for you to try. It's crazy. Take it off
MCT
in the market.
Oil. God
yeah.
bless you. God
I told
bless
her to sitting. I was like, Drew will drink that.
Thank you.
So I thought, and I brought you a prostate play toy. Anal
Ooh,
toy.
No, I don't have a
kidding.
Prostate.
I did. I know, I'm kidding. That's why I didn't do it. Okay. So the thing is about, oh God, what was I saying? My day. About.
Womanizer.
So the woman, oh, okay. I'm like, yeah. They're like, no, but this is different. You've never, I'm like, I've tried every toy. Like I have a Sibian. I have 18 kinds of rabbits. So they send it to me, and I try it, and it kind of looks like this like sexy ear thermometer. Kind of, it was just kind of weird. Which ear thermometer?
Yeah, it looks
sexy.
Like the thermometer you'd use to yeah.
it does,
someone's
but
ear.
It,
yeah,
it basically it target it's
it must
your
target
clitoris.
Exactly.
It's got this pleasure air technology that has indirect stimulation to your clitoris. So there's like this, it barely touches it, but it's just like just enough. I call it the clit whisperer because I feel like if my clitoris could talk, it would be like, this is exactly what oh I wanted. How did you know? So then I was like, really? This
do you have one with to give to her?
Oh, no. The truth is, and I've been doing this for 10 years, in the last 18 months, it's sold more than any other toy because it does this technology.
Does it come That's in cool. chrome and black? Or?
It comes with like diamonds. It comes with Swarovski crystals if you want to go up that high.
No God. Way.
It does. Oh, yeah. They sent me one because I reviewed it. 9 months ago, I wrote him a really good review because I really liked it, and it got really, went viral. And the head of the company wrote me a handwritten letter from Germany, and he's like, "Thank you from so Germany. Much. I so appreciate you supporting this toy." And he sent me the first
Swarovski
crystal one. I mean, I'm like,
that's
Germans
amazing. With all those crystals, though, how do you clean that? I mean, I'm just worried
you know what?
About that.
You just use sex toy cleaner. That's a great point. It's not in. It's in the
What's
handle.
A sex toy cleaner?
It's on the handle. Oh, there's a sex toy cleaner is amazing. It's I love the one by WeVibe. They make one that comes just like in a spray, and so if you're in your bed, you can just spray it and wipe it off, and you don't have to rinse it with water or anything. Yeah. So
the Germans brought us the 60-second female orgasm and heroin.
Right.
That's
Right. But anyway, the woman is cool too. There's lots. Here's the thing. Going back to the female orgasm, which is why we're talking about this, you could use it with a partner. So what women shouldn't be shy to do is say, you know what? It's not going to happen to me during intercourse. So I need some clitoral. Let's bring in this little rabbit vibe or this little clitoral vibe or the womanizer, or I need oral sex or I need more lube.
I find it very bizarre. Maybe you could shed a light on this. When men are threatened by technology.
I know.
Like, that happens to me.
Because they're always worried that it's inadequate in some way.
Yeah.
Right? That's like this base fear that men, I think, walk around their whole lives thinking, many of them. And I'm not going to please a woman either.
But it's a surrogate for their self.
Right.
So if that's inadequate, I'm inadequate.
Exactly.
And so you're calling into question my adequacy. Absolutely. Who the hell do you think you are? And it's like,
and there's
get out of here.
It has nothing to do with
Scram,
that.
Scram, buddy.
Like it feels amazing. Like, I love that. But look how fun this is going to be, too. It's a lot less work for you. And guess what? Men like the vibrations, too. It feels good on them. Yep. So it's like, we're not
probably not the
here.
Womanizer, though. That's
no,
like strategically.
Very special.
Yeah.
Strategically.
Unless you have a clitoris.
Prostate.
Oh, your future daughter might like it with a big clitoris. It'd be perfect.
Oh, my God. You'd need a bigger.
I'm offended.
Drew, I'll show you the picture. I have it somewhere.
No, it's okay.
We believe you.
Okay. Well, you make the determination. You're a doctor.
I'm not good at that. I can try.
It's it's elusive. Like, it's like the Rubik's Cube. The vagina is like the Rubik's Cube of life to many men.
Poor guys. I know, right?
It's so not hard. Easy. It's not easy. It really
but
is. But women have to do a better job.
I was raised by four women, so I'm pretty familiar with vaginas.
But the other thing that we'll get into that in a second, but the other thing that gets men really screwed up is that they finally figure it out and they go, that's how it works. But they don't realize that, no, that's how that one
works. Right.
They're all different.
But here's a different mentality. My dad was really kind of absent in my growing up. He worked a lot and whatever. I was with three older sisters and my mom, who were all coming of age, my sisters, and they were very sexually active as the late 60s, early 70s. So I was around that world. I remember when Deep Throat came out, my sister mom and my mom went and saw
it
together.
Is that the Ron Jeremy?
Explain what you mean by sister mom.
Sister mom's
Linda
my sister
Lovelace,
mom.
Right?
Explain what you mean. In case somebody's...
My, it turned out later in life I found out that my middle sister was my actual natural mother and her parents adopted me.
Wow, okay.
Right? And she grew up in the house until, you know, a few
so
years.
So the guy he called dad was not his dad.
Okay.
It was my grandfather. But anyways, so I grew up around women. And one thing that I realized is when I went out into the world, I knew that women were smarter and better and in charge.
Ooh,
and so I...
How did your dad let that get through?
He was in the thing that we did with her. Yeah. He was very confused and, you know.
Oh, how interesting. Like,
and so I always knew that I've always believed
and
in my core that women
give life.
Women give life. They're smarter. They're better. They're more in control. The world would be a better place if they were in charge. Matriarchal society.
And I said this about your dad only because I know him to be an angry, sort of hyper-masculine dude. And for him to allow you to get that message, I think is pretty evolved.
Yeah.
And he was evolved in certain ways. It's weird.
He was a great guy. Yeah. But he was just tortured with alcoholism. Yeah, That's what I look at. Yeah. He was a master's degree in business. And he grew up in the Depression. Not many people were going to college then.
Yeah.
You know, so what I'm saying is I've always looked like I'm supposed to be serving or helping or partnering with a woman.
Right. Sexually.
Men don't look at it that way.
No.
They're in charge.
Right. And a lot of young men. And hopefully, I'm saying...
I know a lot of 50-year-old young men.
Well, so do I. No, what I'm saying is I hope that, you know, men are learning
and they
through
don't,
Love Line
here's
from my podcast.
The, here's the
but,
weird
know,
thing.
But typically...
I think that what it is they actually down deep know that they don't know or feel inadequate about their penis or how they perform. And they are in their minds, they're supposed to be in charge and know how to do it. And that's where all the ill communication comes from.
And that's what I always talk. You know, I always say communication is a lubrication. Most couples don't know how to talk about sex. They can talk about everything else. When it comes to sex, it's just really uncomfortable, especially if you've been having sex for a while the same way in certain things, and you're like, how do you know, but I wasn't really having an orgasm, or I really want to be able to tell them this, and I don't want to be threatened. And so there's just tools that, you know, you have
it's
to...
It's so weird when people won't speak up about
stuff. I know.
Like,
I always speak up about it.
But I find it bizarre when people don't.
More common than not, though, Drew. I mean, people are
calling
us, and they're like, on Loveline, they're like, for 20 years, you know, I'm
but
having this problem.
The stuff I can't have trouble getting in my head about, that's one of those things.
You're more evolved, but it's like...
Well, I'm more evolved. It's just it seems so weird that you could be that close and intimate with somebody and not kind of speak up a little bit. Like, a little bit.
I think there's so much taboo around it. However you were brought up, it's just wrong. I'm going to be... And women have their own fears. So if I tell you that I can't have an orgasm, something's wrong with me. You're going to go on to a woman who can have orgasms during intercourse. Like, there's just so many things in our heads,
there's
too.
An interesting thing. I'm just thinking about that. I'm going to get a little psychoanalytic a little bit on you guys, which is, you know, men and their relationship with their penis and being sort of... the big penis in charge that's magical and all powerful and stuff. It's a weird psychoanalytic sort of connection. Women also, and it's not evolved, it's not good. I'm not saying it's anything right about it. I agree with you, Bob. But women, on the other hand, feel that if that magic wand doesn't respond perfectly to them, it's their fault. Or they're inadequate.
Not the magic wand vibrator. If they're magic, the man's penis doesn't react to
them. Like, for instance, he can't receive an orgasm or something. They even when they know intellectually it has nothing to do with her. You and I talk to men with delayed ejaculation all the time, and we always turn it
on ourselves.
And the women always go, "I know, but I can't help but feel blah blah blah."
Right. So he's not attracted to me. This is why it's happening.
Has nothing to do.
Nothing
I mean,
to do with
zero.
Us. Right.
But what is that? I don't understand that.
Well, because women, I think, are so.
But you know the guy. Maybe he has some medication that makes it impossible, and still you'll turn it on yourself.
I just think that women are so quick to
low
self-esteem. I think we're so easy,
but
more so than men. We just turn things on ourselves. I think.
Even if you know this, it's just.
I don't think I knew though when
if he didn't have a penis, you'd blame yourself. You know,
I don't know. Maybe it's just.
We're so critical.
Maybe it's what we see too on television. I mean, if you watch porn and you see how we're supposed to be the ones that make it all happen. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, but let's say I explain to you, hey, this is not going to happen. I'm on a medication. It's not going to be possible. No, it'll be great, but it's not going to be possible.
Can I just share a story that'll make, because every time somebody brings up porn, I've never been affected by the way that other people are. If you've ever been on
what does
porn,
that mean?
Well, that it's real life, because on a porn set, I've been on a porn set.
Yeah,
it's one of the strangest.
Yeah,
no, not as an. You want to know why? Because the house that was shooting the porn in looked like a rehab house, and I was doing a rehab commercial right afterwards.
Wow.
Got it. That would be weird.
How crazy is that?
Yeah, how do you get into the mindset of both that?
and I was Dr. Drew's guy, so all the girls wanted to talk to
me.
And so it is so weird. They have. these guys stand in the kitchen. They're all, for one, on the blue pills, whatever those are. Viagra. All the guys
Viagra.
Are. Viagra. And they have fluffers, these people right. that arouse them. Often the guy who I was talking, and he's talking to me while his wife is fluffing him mm-hmm. so he can go to have sex on
with someone
camera.
Else, right.
And he's talking to me about alcoholism in his family, Drew, while this
Perfect.
His wife is, and yeah, and I was in awe of his manhood right. and
I'm
all
sure.
that was going
but
on.
This is
but it's all so fake and
I know,
mechanical
and that's, but that's how
to
most
make
kids
the
today,
image
right.
that, yeah, and he's going to go perform right. for 20 minutes.
And he's not,
shoot
not able to ejaculate, and he's not coming too quickly. Everything's perfect in there, and it's because of her.
And they
she's
stop.
Sexy, so women
they
are thinking,
stop. It's weird, Drew. Look at this. A girl on the couch, they stop, and she just
angle.
Sits
yeah.
there
yeah.
waiting like this.
Exactly.
It's so
right.
mechanical, weird, yeah, and to provide yeah. our the lies to us.
Exactly. And that's what kids, they think that, you know, the first time they have sex, they're thinking, well, why wasn't there six other friends here? And why weren't we having an orgy? And then
no, but
I
how about just
orgasm.
How full of blood their penis is or anything?
Oh,
or
everything.
How
mine's not that big, or that's
how,
right.
How long they can last. So it's all, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I do.
Absolutely.
It's all fake.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
and
but
it,
people
but
don't realize that. They think no, those
Bob,
are people having real sex.
But Bob, it's designed to give the brain, the neurological response systems, the ultimate kapow. And because of the diversity of what's out there, you can actually dial in the highest level of reward for your particular whatever's going on with you.
Well, ever since I had that experience, I can't really watch it because I always think of that guy talking to me.
Well, that's good. Then you don't need another addiction on your hands.
I just think about the human trafficking and the trauma
right.
and the women and stuff.
I
think,
yeah, I know. I mean, there's a lot of problems with porn. Yeah. I mean, I think that it's built. You know, the reason why it's created is for men, so it's visually pleasing, and you know, you have an orgasm, you enjoy it, you masturbate, but it's not technically so anybody should be learning actually how to have sex.
But I think
porn.
They
that's
are.
What
I
I'm
think
saying.
They're
that
thinking
problem
of themselves.
Is they are. There's not great sex ed in schools at all. They're barely teaching it. They're just scaring them by saying it's like the bed when they say no to drugs, like say no to sex because you're going to get an STI. But that's not saying like, but sex, there's, you know, there's some other things it can do too, and pleasure and other. They're just not. They're teaching all the wrong things. It's fear based yeah. and. It's not comprehensive.
And I'm not
schools.
Saying there's anything wrong with porn.
No.
Like, you know what I mean?
No,
but I just wonder
with it, it's fine.
Wonder why, because I really don't know the answer to that, honestly.
Why,
why women put it all on themselves when something doesn't
I,
go
I think
but
it's
men
something,
put it on themselves, too.
But them, it's about...
They put it back on the girl. That
yeah,
you're
there's
not
something wrong with you. Right.
Enough.
Some,
there's something,
well, no, no,
I think
no,
there's
no,
a lot
no.
of...
No, no, no,
I think
no,
there's
no.
a lot of that.
I'm talking about, like, if a man... doesn't make a woman have an orgasm, he'll
right.
put it back on the woman because my thing is perfect, you know.
Right.
But if he is unable or has delayed ejaculation, usually they'll let you know
you
about that.
Delayed
you know,
ejaculation.
You know
that's
tell
a
us
big one.
And then we put it on ourselves.
Yeah, well, like
and
he
no
did.
Matter what he says, no matter how he explains what his condition is, no matter what the cause of the condition is, the woman always feels like, oh,
yeah.
I did
well, I think that self-esteem issues are low-hanging fruit for a lot of women, body image tied up in our performance and our sexuality. And so if something, even something like that is gonna hit it, that's comfortable to us. Like, oh, it's my fault. We want to beat ourselves
what
up.
What are the biggest complaints? These are from people that I know that talk to me about it. Girls complain that there's not enough foreplay and cuddling and spooning and mm-hmm. love and that, right? Boys complain there's not enough blowjobs.
Right.
I always say, start cuddling and doing, you know, without even knowing that side of the equation. The girls tell me there's not enough foreplay.
Right.
That's why they're bored or they don't want to do it. The guys say, she hasn't given me a blowjob in a year or whatever. I say, why don't you try cuddling and nurturing and loving and spooning and being affectionate? I bet you get a blowjob.
Right.
Not only that, Bob, I would urge the young man to start their foreplay with the conversation at dinner.
Yep.
Because it turns out that in terms of arousal systems in female, intimate conversation activates it.
Huge.
Right. Huge. We want.
Oh, it's right. the biggest for me.
Yeah.
If I have an intimate, intellectual conversation, it turns me on so much. Yep. Way more than somebody grabbing my boobs or like
right.
saying, hey, let's go do this. It's like, I need to have that intellectual
yeah.
stimulation.
Send a sexy text too if you can't
and
talk.
The,
like
the MRI, functional MRIs, bear this out like
yep.
crazy.
Well,
maybe
how
the words.
How many? How well? Let's get the into other marriage is, then. Well, how many married couples are having those kind of conversations? You're having technical conversations about moving kids around. And
right,
cars
you know,
you're 401k.
She moved to the country. Yeah, she stayed in the city. But you're not talking about your sex life and your orgasms at all.
No, it has to be paid attention. That's why people obviously need date nights. You need conversation. You need to listen. You need to be present. All that kind of stuff is critically important.
I went on date nights with my ex-wife. We talked about schools and.
See, and you know what you should do on this.
You know
I suggest
I mean? You
no,
don't
totally,
even know what to talk about on the date night.
Right.
Listen, I've got.
But
some...
I suggest couples though when they do have date night that like take things out. Like we're not going to talk about the kids. We're not going to talk about work. We're not going to. We're going to remember
the
things that we used to love talking
Emily.
About.
That's our life, Emily. That's our life. How can we not
Monday
talk about our life?
First of all, you have one kid. We managed to put stuff aside for three.
Yeah, they can do it with
so
three.
If we can do it, you can
Bob,
do it.
Bob, I don't want to hear it.
Number two, there's a guy named Stephen Stephen Hammond Hammann at Emory, who has this great functional MRI data about men and women. He usually really good stuff.
Yeah.
And he really has all the arousal stuff. And Stephen Hammond. And I went down there and interviewed him once. I actually got in the scanner myself and had myself my own stuff done. And he showed that women, it lateralizes a little bit, but the amygdala activity and the arousal activity in women is actually even more intense, particularly when looking at certain kind of images and stuff. But they don't have desire and appetite of drive attached to it. Men, arousal and drive always go together.
Right.
Always.
In sync.
And women can actually be more aroused, and this is why a man can understand this, can be more aroused but have no intent. And so they're having huge arousal. They're like, I really like how the guy looks. And that's why we go, well, what do you mean? Because we assume that means intention, desire.
Yeah.
Disconnected. And most women, not all women, by the way.
Right. So. That's true. Like, he's coming in saying, I'm all turned on. I want a blowjob right now. And she's like, I didn't even see you come in the door. Like, I was in the middle of, you know, finishing up this email here. We're not turned on yet. We're not even thinking about it. But
absolutely.
Men are just, they thought about it and they were turned on like that. And so that's why I always say, you know, foreplay is not like a light suggestion. It's absolutely a requirement. Like, we actually need it, require it. And if you could do it by talking, telling, you know, affirming, telling
just,
me what
just,
you're
you
thinking.
Know, every guy that heard about the womanizer is like, oh, perfect. Let's just go right to that.
Exactly.
Let's just go right to the womanizer.
Exactly. Yeah, go to the womanizer.
Well, no, that's too fast, right? Isn't it?
What?
A guy would think, oh, perfect. We'll just put the womanizer on. That's what he thinks is foreplay.
Right.
That
is not foreplay. Okay. That's more for her own thing. No. Foreplay is, you know, it can be conversation. It can be dinner. It can be all these things, sexy texts about what you're thinking about, what you want to do later. But it's, you know, it's intimacy. It's kissing. Mm-hmm. It's foreplay. It's, you know, yep. Oral sex. I'm like pointing. Oral sex, you
but,
know.
But we have to up. But we have to keep in mind that's not how our brains work.
Right.
So we have to, it just completely like,
huh? You're ready to go, right.
Yeah, because you've all this time thought foreplay meant some kind of touching. No. And it certainly doesn't mean genital touching.
No. Foreplay. Not, I'm not talking about that.
Just saying.
But I didn't know it was so with, much language oriented.
Foreplay starts after the last orgasm.
Oh, geez.
It should, right?
I'm just saying they give you time. I don't know.
You have tons of time.
Well, now I'm starting to put two and two together because I'm in a new relationship this year and, it's new from April, right?
Wow, so, and you're having a baby.
Yeah.
This is so interesting.
So,
okay.
Yeah, I go.
Wow,
I've
yeah,
only
you
got 25
time.
More
you're
years
so, you're
left.
You're so efficient. Yeah.
So
it's one word for
I realize we have these deep intellectual conversations downstairs in the dining room sometimes at night. And then she'll go walking by me to the stairs and go, are you going to come upstairs? And I was like, well, the basketball's on.
Oh, you're missing your
I'm
cue.
I'm missing my cue.
You are missing
the cue.
Yeah. Dude, turn off the game.
We're just
tape
talking.
The game.
We're
tape
just
the game.
Talking.
Right,
talking is so
that.
Sexy. Like,
why do you think we always want to talk? You know? It's true. Like our brain's the largest sex organ for women. A lot of women. Like it starts there. Like,
I was being honest, Drew. Because I think that she's
so
saying I'm feeling,
love letters,
but I didn't know the talking is making her feel that way.
Well,
I thought that she's starting to
her.
Feel that way.
You should ask her.
I'm
going
to ask her
no.
as soon as
this
I get home.
This is such a good conversation.
And when they're pregnant, it's amplified. Everything's
right.
amplified because they feel vulnerable. They feel emotionally intense.
Right.
All those needs are worse. And they may feel more sexual on top of that.
Yeah. And
on
she might want to. She might hate you the next day and be, you know, everything. Let's throw your clothes out. Not yet.
But sadness. She describes feeling sad,
oh,
and I go, what does that
really
mean? What does it mean?
Progesterone's very depressing.
I'm right here. Just the other day, I said, I'm right here,
dude,
and I was
dude.
Holding her, and she goes,
oh,
I just
good.
Feel sad.
First of all emotions are amplified, but progesterone is a depressant for some women, and her placenta is pumping out shitloads of progesterone.
Yeah, her hormones are going
what
haywire.
Sad, though? How's that a way to describe it? Wouldn't
hormone.
You feel empty?
No, sad.
Makes
what's sad? I don't get
depressed.
Yeah.
Okay.
I get that. I'm always that.
Yeah, but okay, she's... I'm the only person who is pregnant here.
Yeah, let the pregnant
one thank you,
about.
Susan.
Okay. What is sad when Chrissy describes I'm sad for no reason? Well, she gets angry about it because it's for no reason.
Well, that's just your hormones are raging and you're extremely emotional on every level. But sexually, I never had the drive before I was pregnant. Like, it just... My breasts became larger. I felt really sexy. And I wasn't allowed to have sex for the first 3 months. So it was really, really difficult because we couldn't do anything because it would put me into labor. At first my ovary was the size of a grapefruit. But I'm really unusual because I had three at the same time. So I had like three times as many hormones as...
Oh, really?
Like, did you eventually want, after the first 3 months, did you
want
sex?
I wanted sex every day. Oh, I wanted to have sex. And I before that, I really could care less. But
thank you.
Yeah, sorry.
It was the hormones.
Not enough talking.
It was fun getting
probably
pregnant.
True. Probably true.
No, but seriously, it was really such a huge difference. It's almost like I feel now on hormone replacement therapy because I have extra progesterone and I have extra estrogen now that I didn't have before. So you're more male like. But you have that emotional side where everything smells terrible, and because you're protecting the baby, you don't want to be around
noxious stimulus.
Your body just completely changes, and it's just to protect the baby. Yeah. But sexually, I really wanted to have sex. It was really painful.
There
not
you
being
go.
Able to. Yeah.
The forest
and the Pinskys aren't that far apart.
No, third trimester got a lot worse too.
I have a question. So how do we find the happy medium to make the men happy, you know?
That's what I was trying to say.
Because it's difficult. Like, that was a struggle for me. Like, I needed all this intellectual conversation, all this stuff. And then, you know, my husband was totally different. And it feels like we couldn't find that balance where we were both getting our needs met.
Right. But weren't you early on in the relationship? Weren't you somehow doing it?
Well, early
on, courtship
it's different early on, though, because you just want to have sex every day.
It's a great Emily question.
Yeah,
it's
evolutionary space. I mean, 6 months to 12 months, 2 years, you're in the honeymoon phase. So you have nothing to talk about because all you want to do is rip each other's clothes off. And sex is amazing and you're connected. But, you know, biology, everything changes after 2 years. The chemicals that were serving you before are no longer. You become more set in your way. All the things that made it exciting, the novelty, the newness, the excitement, the spontaneity, go away when you start pairing with somebody. And you don't have those elements that made it so hot and sexy in the beginning. You start to settle in your routine and you don't really want to have as much sex anymore. But the problem is you think, but it was so great and now I don't want to talk
about
it.
How much of that is cohabitation?
A lot of it. Mm-hmm. A lot of it. But it's cohabit because what you can do, you could cohabitate and say, I understand that this means that we're going to have the day-to-day. It's going to be more monotonous. There won't be... I know
you're trying to say monogamous, but you can't.
No, but both. But it's going to get... you know, it is. It's going to be the same things every day. And I say, like, you know what? Make those adjustments. Like, you still have to do your work to keep it as interesting and as sexy. And a little bit of, you know... A little bit of a new keep some of the mystery. So why go to the bathroom with the door open? You need to really do all these things in front of you. I mean, I know it sounds silly, like I'm not saying
that. I believe that.
You still want to, you know, sexy. You still want to do things that make you feel sexy, which in turn your partner will be turned on by. But in your case, Cindy, like, I'm not sure. Did you guys ever? Because how do you reconcile? Every couple's got their own thing. So really, it's about having an honest conversation, like, well, this is what I need. Like, I need more talking and I'd like to have sex a few times a week and this kind of thing. And then he says what he needs. I need 16 blowjobs. You're like, that's not going to work. And you kind of find common ground.
Like, where do you find it? Right. Where do you find
that's
it?
That's not going to work. I liked how you said that.
There has to be,
work.
Really, there has to be like compromise. My job, maybe. It's all compromise.
But some of it is being very clear and courageous about what you reveal about yourself and educating each other about one another.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if the conversation is critical, you got to tell them, like, it may not make sense to you, but this really is something we need. Can we just factor that in somehow, at least two out of the three times?
Right.
Something like that.
Right.
You know, and then you're going to say, okay, what I'm going to do that third time is I'm going to step up even when I'm not aroused yet. I'm going to figure out a way to just
that's
make
what
this
I mean.
Happen.
Yeah. It's like figuring out how to meet each other's needs that way.
Exactly.
It's and it's a matter of talking about it. You know, and again, these people think these conversations have to be so heavy. And my advice always keep it a little lighter. It doesn't have to be like, we need to talk.
Oh, no.
You know, it's like, hey, you know, sex is, have a good sex. It's a good time. And here's some things I thought we could work on. Hey. You know, you try because it is such a charged subject. It is true. And the other thing about a lot of women who don't
who report like they don't want to have sex, I always say it's like going to the gym. Sometimes the hardest part is getting out the door, right? Yep. Like getting your shoes on. But once you go, you're like, oh, and you're never like, God, why do I go to the gym? And a lot of times for women who don't feel turned on right away, once they start having sex, they're like, oh, I'm into it. I get it. So you just kind of start.
That's the one time you step up and do it.
That's the step up time.
I'll be into this, or if I'm not, I'll be able to tell him I'm not. If it really doesn't work, you have to be able to go,
right.
I tried, but I just can't. Candles.
I want some emails.
She's got all these gifts here. I'm like digging
through.
I want some emails sent in about sex because we want to talk about more than just addiction and
I'll come back. Emails. I mean, sex.
Yeah, we need some emails. Do a Drewism asking for emails.
Ask topics you want.
You mean you want more?
I want people to email in about sex because I think sex.
And then we'll have Emily back.
He's
like yes or no or
sex? No, yeah, but sex is not talked about enough. Openly, because men are defensive.
Jesus, I've been doing a radio show for 34 years.
I always think of what it kind of is about teenage sex. It's not about adult sex.
No, it's evolved over the years. Originally, it was about HIV and AIDS because I knew what young people were up to, and I wanted them to be aware it was coming. Then it became about adolescent health and things, and then it became about drugs and alcohol, and it sort of evolved into more global questions.
But I just think this was a conversation like needs to be had by my friends and my friends' wives and
needs to be
like
normalized.
And Loveline's a little more evocative, a little more edgy.
Well, I do it on
this
my podcast. You should sex with Emily. I've been doing it for 10 years.
Yeah, Emily does all the time. She's way into this, but she has a candle now.
Oh, okay. This is a present for Bob. So I make these massage candles. Okay. And they are aromatherapy. They're so pregnant safe. It's coconut oil, soybean oil. They're vegan except for the beeswax part. But the point is you light it, and it's calming and soothing, and then you blow it out. After a few minutes, it turns to this like warm, luxurious massage oil that you can put in. But it's not like waxy or sticky or weird.
Just oily.
It's like oil. And I use it like on my skin as a moisturizer at night.
And thank you.
And that was, I have something else for you that's not that organized in these things. But keep pulling stuff out.
I want the womanizer to see what it does to my penis.
That was for Susan. We could open that. Yeah.
I'll give it to Susan. Here, I'll throw it to
you. It might break. It might be a womanizer.
It might be glass. You never know.
It's true.
I've seen one of those glass ones.
What else is in there?
That's it.
And then I have... No, there's more. Okay, I have another bag over there.
Oh, you have a whole huge bag here.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
It's so hard, though, because my car is usually filled with sex toys.
What kind of bag is that?
That's a big black bag.
No, but what company
made
it?
Easter Bunny?
Easter present.
Well, okay, so this is neat because it's Easter, so I bought you a rabbit.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much.
That's some called Sugar Pop. That's from Vibratix. Oh, you do?
You already gave me one.
Oh, I thought that you did. Okay.
I've never had a rabbit.
What is it?
She's disappointed.
Well, no, wait.
Do you need this?
You gave me this already.
No. I'm getting divorced. I need this more than you.
I like that one.
Well, wait. I thought that you needed something like that. I can't talk to your husband anymore about these things, though.
I have one.
It's a rock.
Oh, she likes the...
I got a rock.
You want the... Right. Okay.
At least it's hard.
I wasn't sure. Okay. I have one for you. The Rave by WeVibe is... But it vibrates, but you don't have to turn the vibrator on.
It's okay.
I know what you want. We'll work on it.
Plenty of stuff.
Thank
you,
Emily.
It's like Santa Claus.
I know.
It is.
It's Easter. And then... did I bring enough these? I want... I got you guys my t-shirts.
I'm gonna go find a womanizer.
Oh, but Drew, I don't know if I have. I didn't have big size.
Ooh, look at that! Good for you.
I have Sex with Emily t-shirts.
Great t-shirt.
I brought one for you too. But see, we don't have extra large. We have large, but I think they run.
That's
medium, right?
Open that up. Show.
I
want to
see what
Cindy,
it says.
What says on the back?
Wait, turn it on the back.
It says, "I had sex with Emily, and all I got was this t-shirt."
Nice.
There you go.
I brought one for Susan, and I brought one for you, but I think it fell in the car.
That's right.
I have a large for you. But I think a large whatever. Then my t-shirts. It'll
work. It's gonna
work.
And
then I have
perfect.
What else do I have? I have stuff in my car. I always have stuff. But that's some stuff I thought you'd like for.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Can we assume that a lot of sex toys are for the 90%?
Or for the anyone would like this.
For the 90% who don't have orgasms from intercourse.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Right? Or yes, I think that sex toys.
Well,
can
even
enhance
but
it.
Even the ones
who can't
or alone that.
Well, there's a certain person close to me that is part of the 10%.
That is able to do so easily.
That's Chrissy. And so she doesn't like these things. She says it's better.
Oh, yeah.
The people, the 10%ers don't need a lot of this stuff.
But they could use the dildos, though.
Yeah. And everyone should use lube. You know, I'm a huge fan of lube. Lube is so underrated. I'm telling you, people think that there's like a stigma. Again, men think if it's dry, discomfort. No, it feels really... More women like an orgasm when they have one.
I just want to say, woman to woman, I just totally appreciate what you do because these discussions really need to be had in an open environment where people feel comfortable.
That's what I do. You got to come
to be sexy eyes. That does look German.
What is that? That looks prostate.
No, this is the Apex M.
That's the Apex M, which is the most amazing thing ever because it's a Kegel exerciser for women.
But it's deep up where the bladder
muscles. Yeah, that looks like a medical instrument.
No, but it kind of is. It's electrostimulation.
It's a medical treatment.
I thought that was the womanizer.
No, there's the womanizer.
There's the womanizer over here.
Okay.
This should be Christmas. We have to do a Christmas special. We open up.
We should.
Emily's sex toys.
I know.
It's a great idea.
I know. I wanted to bring. I was like, I'm like, what are they? So many to bring. It's so little time.
So the Apex M, you can get it in Control Medical or at doctor.com. And it really is. The reason I'm excited about it is it avoids surgery.
Oh.
You got it.
There's the womanizer.
I get it. I know where this goes.
It hovers over your clitoris like a little lovely kissy.
All right, enough about the clitoris. Let's talk about medical problems.
Oh, let's talk about the Kegels. It's electrostimulation. Yeah. So you put this inside you, it inflates. So a lot of women do Kegel exercises, but they do them wrong. It's like those pee-stopping muscles, same way as the men find it. But this actually, you put it inside you and it inflates, okay? So you put
it
inside. So
push against it.
So it pushes, so it targets your PC muscles.
But it does more than just PC. This stuff here, this electrostim thing is for the way up in the vagina.
Yeah, and this stimulates, it's electrostimulation, but it doesn't, like, it sounds scary, but it feels amazing.
No, this is not sexually stimulating.
It stimulates your muscles, so you really don't even have to. You can just lie back and it's already working your muscles for you, which is like if someone, you could go to the gym and someone could, like, do your sit-ups for you.
Well, but I know people are sort of, they think of those abdominal stimulators. Those really don't do that
no,
much.
No, what I'm saying is I wish it could work out for me, but this
because
is a
these
workout
are, this
for you.
Is about the smooth muscle. Smooth muscle is different than skeletal muscle.
I don't know. And is this something about it's not sexy?
It's not supposed to be.
It's a medical device.
It's so women can have stronger orgasms. They can prevent urinary. They can cure urinary
anything
incontinence.
Anything that involves a vagina is sexy, Drew.
Oh. That's
true. Well, so, then here.
So that should be black.
It should be. Susan, have fun editing this.
This is chrome.
Oh my God.
Where do you get it? InControlMedical.com, Apex M. You can get that.
At doctor.com, probably sexwithemily.com.
Sexwithemily.com too.
All right, so Emily, wrap it up for us. Where can we find you? What can people
learn from you? Everyone, check out my podcast. It's at everything's at Sex with Emily. We just launched a new website. I also, if you're interested in Kegels, I do have an iPhone app called Kegel Camp. And I do my show 2 podcasts a week. Subscribe. That's the best way to hear it. And I cover topics at all range of sex and relationships. You can email me your questions, feedback@sexwithemily.com. And we post new blogs. My site has 10 years of sex information on it. So anything you want to know about
sex. Will you be a part of our live This Life at the Improv?
Oh, yeah. We just these two wanted to do it. We decided the three of us would do maybe something with the Improv. Maybe you'd be part of that,
too. I love
too.
It. Yeah. I love doing Improv.
We do. Emily have done stuff like that a couple of times.
Two. We have done two or three of the Improv. He came to my 10-year anniversary. Yeah. Totally.
That would be fun.
The Improv has become not just a comedy show, but a place where the people have sort of podcasts.
Yeah, Carano was there last night.
Did you see it?
Did you go?
I did.
Did you go?
He was good. He was good. Yeah, I did go.
I was supposed to go, but I was speaking at a 12-step meeting in Malibu that I thought was going to be like, it was at a school, so I thought, oh, it'll be in a classroom. It was in the auditorium that I walked in. There was like 500 people.
Oh, no.
And I was like, oh, my God.
Oh, jeez.
But I know how to tell a story.
Good. Well done.
I would love to come hear you chair a meeting someday. I bet it was fantastic.
It was something. Talk about sister mom always gets a laugh. It just never stops getting a laugh.
There's
nothing not funny about a sister mom. What's not funny
we
about
all
that?
Laughed
it has a Mormon tinge to it. It has so many aspects of comedy. So let's do this at the Improv.
All right, we got to wrap this up. Emily, thank you. Thank you for being part of this. It's always fun.
And we'll have you back soon
and we'll do more gifts. And Cindy, thanks for sticking around doing another podcast.
Send your emails.
Yeah, Bob wants more questions about sex and relationships, which I'm happy to entertain in addition. Because again, the idea behind this podcast was about this life.
Whole life.
Yeah. And we have a perspective. We're doing a lot of addiction stuff here because that's just, he and I are passionate about that. But we want to get a little more, you know, Cindy very broadened us out. Emily's broadening us out into other topics, and we really do appreciate their participation and yours as well. And remind you, just please do support the people that support us. DrDrew.com. Click on the Amazon banner. Also at thislifepodcast.com. And some of these products we talk about, we carefully select who supports us, and we try to make sure that they're actually good. So hopefully you'll they will do good, and we hope to do the same. So we'll see you next time.
Conversation is community. Good night.
The beat of our love.